BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
We are glad to have you listening here to the VCY America Radio Network in for Jim Schneider. I am Dalton Windsor. We will, God willing, get to the phones later this hour as we would like to hear from you. We would like to have you weigh in on all of the, well, not all, because there's no way we could do that in the time span that we have here, but we would like to hear from you regarding many of the things that, well, have been headline news all this week. When we come to a Friday such as this, when you're hearing this, when we come to Friday, we're looking back at the news from the really the past week, maybe what the goings-on of the past weekend and Lord's Day Sunday and then these past several days. And there are several things that we need to mention and make sure that you know about. And then maybe you can call in and talk with us. But thanks to Sandy for gathering so many stories this week. We have Karen on the phones here. We'll be opening those up in just a little bit. Justin is at Master Control today. So let's get started. At the top of the stack here today, we must talk about the wildfire in Maui. As flames tore through that West Maui neighborhood, car after car of fleeing residents headed for the only paved road out of town in a desperate race for safety. Now, this is out of Breitbart News. And I was just thinking back here, just a personal note for me. It was 2 weeks ago, I believe, I was in for Jim. And what were we talking about? Our lead story that day was really more of a fresh account of what had taken place in Maui. And here we are 2 weeks later, and there's still a lot we do not know. Does that not trouble you? It certainly does us. This says car after car was turned back toward the rapidly spreading wildfire by a barricade blocking access to Highway 30. Let's set the scene again here. As flames tore through a West Maui neighborhood, car after car, fleeing residents that were heading for the only paved road out of town looking for safety, was turned back toward the spreading wildfire by a barricade blocking access to Highway 30. One family swerved around the barricade and was safe, and in a nearby town 48 minutes later. Another drove their four-wheel drive car down a dirt road to escape. One man took a dirt road uphill, climbing above the fire and watching as Lahaina burned. He later picked his way through the flames, the smoke, the rubble, and was able to pull some survivors to safety. But dozens of others found themselves caught. Their cars jammed together on a narrow road, surrounded by flames on three sides, and the rocky ocean waves on the fourth. Some died in their cars. Others were trying to run for safety. Here's a quote. "I could see from the bypass that people were stuck on the balcony, so I went down and checked it out," says Kakoa Lansford, who made several trips into town to look for survivors. What he found was horrible. Dead bodies and flames like a terrible movie scene, and I could see that the people were on fire, that the fire was just being stoked by the wind and being pushed toward the homes. The road closures, some because of the fire, some because of downed power lines, contributed to making this historic area of Lahaina the site of the deadliest U.S. wildfire in more than a century. Now, a flash drought in the region provided plenty of kindling. Hurricane Dora brought strong winds to Maui as it passed roughly 500 miles south of the Hawaii island chain. Those winds downed at least 30 power poles in West Maui, and Hawaiian Electric had no procedure in place for turning off the grid, which would be a common practice in other fire-prone states. Video shot by a Lahaina resident, shows a downed power line setting dry grasses afire, possibly revealing the start of the larger fire. Later, as the fire began to swallow homes in its path, Maui County emergency officials declined to use an extensive network of emergency sirens to alert Lahaina's residents to get out, to flee. Lansford focuses, Kakoa, the one that we were quoting, focused his efforts on Front Street, getting as many people as he could out of the fire. He said, pulling them off behind the seawall, you know, and walking them back to my truck. He takes each person to a place that seems safe from fire where they can be picked up by others, and then he goes back to find more. The story goes on here. Many of the survivors are angry, haunted by the thought that just a few minutes of notice could have saved so many lives. One resident there, Nate Baird's neighborhood near Lahaina Luna Road, was filled with kids who were home alone when the flames hit. He said, we needed like 10 more minutes and we could have saved a lot of kids, choking back tears, if we would have just had a 10 or 15 minute warning. Kids just don't have a filter, so their son ran up and was just telling our son, you know, this kid is dead. The kid is dead. And it's like all my son's friends that they come to our house every day, he said, and their parents were at work and they were home alone and nobody had a warning. Nobody knew. You know, we call them, you know, many times you hear of freak accidents or catastrophic events. But, I mean, shouldn't we be better than this in 2023? Shouldn't we have had some sort of warning for this? We have tsunami warnings. They can tell you when there's going to be a tsunami. But we don't have any kind of warning system for something as tragic as this. Or there may be a system in place, but who dropped the ball? We read weather forecasts here on the network, and we are often seeing the red flag warnings, right? You hear about those, and they're quite common in some areas, especially out west. And we talk about the red flag warnings, not a good time to be doing any outdoor burning, all of that. You hear those things. But could there have not been something as such better in place? Again, what are the residents saying? Could we not have had 10 or 15 minutes of warning? Looking back in retrospect, here's a resident saying, could we not have had 10 or 15 minutes of warning? This from Reuters, Hawaii officials releasing the names of 338 people still missing. By the way, 2 weeks ago during this show, we were near 100 reportedly dead. That was 2 weeks ago. Now, Hawaii officials releasing the names of 338 people still missing. 338 still missing more than 2 weeks after this fire in Maui. The list compiled by the FBI includes only people whose full names are known and who were reported missing by someone for whom authorities have verified contact information. The death toll from the fire on August the 8th stands at 115, but officials have warned that figure is likely to rise substantially with search teams still sifting through the ashes. Officials also encouraging relatives to submit the names of anyone else still missing and to provide DNA samples to assist in identifying remains. The number of families that have provided DNA is lower than authorities had hoped for thus far. Officials have said earlier in the week that they had a running list of 1,000 to 1,100 people still unaccounted for, but they warned that the tally included some people with only a single name, some duplicate listings, and some people whose gender was unclear. As of Thursday afternoon, an additional 1,732 people initially reported missing had been found. Here from the Daily Signal, President Joe Biden on Monday compared the horrific fires in western Maui to a kitchen fire in his house during which he almost lost his 67 Corvette. I'm just reading this. Did you catch that quote on Monday? Our president comparing these fires in western Maui to a kitchen fire that he had in his house once, where he, quote, almost lost his 67 Corvette. Locals condemning the comparison, saying that it belittled the disaster that likely has claimed over 1,000 lives and caused billions of dollars worth of damage. Here's a quote from a restaurant owner. "This is the most despicable thing this president has ever said," says a restaurant owner in Maui. At a small sandwich shop north of Kaihi, a former teacher, Kristen Goodwin, described how she felt after such a comment, saying, "There are no words in response to something like that. There's 1,000 people still missing on this island, business owners who want people to come back and who is going to come to a secluded island with people still missing. The community members have rallied together and have taken care of each other. It was several days before the feds had came and helped. They shut down a road for no good reason, except they didn't want people trampling over the rescue and search sites. Nobody understands that unless they're here," she said. Of Biden, she said, "I'm not voting for him again. That's for sure. I'll vote for Trump. I will never vote for Biden again." Goodwin also lambasting the president's initial response to the fire, saying, "The lack of connection, the lack of real emotion, is Biden even there? The no comment situation, how dare he? He could have said at least our thoughts and prayers." Especially when it's a historical fire, the largest fire in recent American history, and you said no comment, Mr. President, and then you went back to bicycling for hours? Goodwin also finally just went on to say, "It just seemed like his being here was a photo op to me." Leslie Santos, a retired university administrator and a native of Maui, asked the Daily Signal how a leader could be so insensitive and lack the level of compassion of a basic human being. "I am not sure how anyone could compare the almost loss of a Corvette to the loss of life, loss of all one's possessions, and the loss of livelihoods. I am offended. I am so disappointed in Biden, and I am a Democrat," says Leslie Santos, a retired university administrator and native of Maui, who was talking with the Daily Signal. Well, are you anywhere close to where I'm at in my thinking right now? Do we know, can we find out what happened? Well, there's something going on where the House may begin an investigation into these wildfires that we've been talking about. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy on Wednesday has begun talking about that. We'll take this break. We'll come back and pick it up right where we're leaving off. You're listening to Friday News Roundup and Comments on the VCY America Radio Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how many stars are there?
Chris, this is the question for which there is no answer. We go out on a clear night and look up, and we only see about 3,000 or so stars with the naked eye, but with telescopes or binoculars, we can see many more. Scientists estimate that our Milky Way galaxy contains over 200 billion stars, and now we can see billions and billions of galaxies, and we haven't even seen the edge of the universe. With every new telescope, we're seeing whole new regions of space full of galaxies. Chris, God told Abraham that the stars in the sky were in essence innumerable, and how right he was. As always, the scientific information that we gather supports the clear teaching of the Word of God, even those truths that are found when we go back to Genesis.
To find out more about creation science, visit us on the web at www.icr.org. That's www.icr.org.
You're listening to Friday News Roundup and Comments here on Crosstalk. And just before the break, really just, and it's so deserving to give all of our attention to the tragic things going on that has happened in Maui. Again, quoting the one gentleman there saying that we just needed 10 or 15 minutes warning. We could have saved so many kids with 10 or 15 minutes warning. They just wanted 10 or 15 minutes and they couldn't get it. You know, and we mentioned how, you know, even here in the States, the National Weather Service will issue, you know, what we've become quite common to hearing, frequently hearing of red flag warnings and such. Was there no kind of warning in place? Well, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy Wednesday suggesting that the lower chamber of the House of Representatives, may investigate the national response to this wildfire, as the emergency response itself has come under scrutiny, with at least one emergency services official resigning over a decision not to set off the warning sirens. McCarthy, for his part, questioned the evidently substantial number of missing persons, saying, "I'm very concerned about the response." That according to The Hill. How could you lose that many Americans in today's age? Is that not what we simply, that's how we started the program in today, in 2023, with all that we have? And how could we lose this many Americans today to this? "I'm going to be working with committees to investigate what went on so this never happens again." That from House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Well, PJ Media saying there's nothing, and this is a story, well, more about, I guess, our response or lack thereof. The headline, FEMA officials enjoying luxury hotels as displaced Maui residents need aid. Do I even need to say more? Reading this one. Nothing like staying at a swanky vacation resort while conducting disaster relief. Government FEMA officials reportedly enjoying $1,000 a night luxury accommodations at Hawaiian hotels, even as the Maui fire survivors, the officials are supposedly helping desperately need more aid. The U.S. government has already been slammed for its response to the devastating fires. Joe Biden going from showing apparent indifference to a gaffe-filled and out-of-touch visit to Maui. Meanwhile, local officials are being criticized for the fact that water was not initially released against the blaze. Government neglect seems to have been exacerbated the risk of fire ahead of time, and the warning sirens did not go off. The latest scandal is reported on Tuesday the 22nd, exclusive from the UK Daily Mail, accusing government officials of staying in four-star and five-star hotels removed from the disaster zone, as fire survivors who lost everything still lack just anything sufficient, any sufficient aid. Tragically, at least 115 people are dead from the fire, and many more still unaccounted for, thousands homeless. But that has not stopped the under-fire agency, FEMA, from splashing taxpayer cash to put up more than 1,000 of its personnel at four bank-breaking resorts after this deadly wildfire. The deadliest wildfire in the U.S. in more than a century that has caused an estimated $5 billion in damage. Locals there furiously slamming the government for $700 one-time payments to survivors, and reports that FEMA has blocked volunteers from bringing in aid since only FEMA-approved aid is allowed. Here's someone named last name Lanny describing itself as oceanfront paradise. The Four Seasons claims to provide elevated luxury at Maui's most glamorous oceanfront resort. The Grand Wailea calls itself Maui's premier luxury beachfront destination. This is where the FEMA officials are staying at taxpayer expense while fire survivors suffer. Well, looking north, government officials in British Columbia, Canada, urging residents of wildfire-affected areas this weekend to stop taking hoses, sprinklers, and other firefighting gear from the government's rescue teams, lamenting that critical equipment is disappearing. What's going on in Canada, folks? The people there are refusing to watch things burn. And it's resulted in people stealing firefighting equipment just to put out fires. And here the government there in British Columbia is urging residents to stop taking these things. Residents who spoke to CTV News confirmed that civilians are taking the equipment, trying to put out the fires themselves. They also said that in many regions, civilians are the only groups of people actively trying to. Desperate acts by Canadians feeling abandoned by their government, which has no federal firefighting agency and no functional emergency management organization, highlight the growing tragedy of one of the most devastating wildfire seasons in Canada's history, exacerbated by a lack of government forest management and slow responses from provincial governments to the emergencies. The wildfires have burned so expansively and for such a prolonged amount of time that the smoke has devastated the air quality of the U.S. at its peak, affecting as many as 70 million Americans and disappearing Manhattan into a plume of orange smoke. Have you saw those photos? The government of radical leftist Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has blamed the fires on, quote, climate change, rather than addressing the need for improved forest management and the development of more robust federal-level firefighting protocols. Well, we'll have to set these stories aside, and obviously, friends, we've given the news on these fires. Let's remember to pray. Let's call on our Father God on behalf of these. Let's intercede on behalf of these in Maui and everywhere for those that are suffering as a result of all that has taken place with these wildfires in Maui, and yes, and these that are dealing with it still to this day in Canada. Obviously, there's a difference in the Maui fire versus just the forest fire of such, but definitely include them in our prayers. And as the saints would meet this Sunday, I would hope that we all might pause and lift these up. Well, the other stories coming in our direction this week, did you hear there was a debate, a Republican debate, several people on stage here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin? I don't know that I could do it, but I could quite possibly throw a rock and hit that place. I'm not saying that I would. I'm just trying to that's not a threat of any kind. I'm just simply saying that that's how close the Republican debates were from VCY headquarters this week. So, obviously, the debate's getting lots of talk, but more so than the debates, we're still hearing about another indictment for former President Donald Trump. He did surrender yesterday on charges that he illegally schemed to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia. This is from Newsmax. He surrendered. It was a brisk 20-minute booking that yielded a historic first, a mugshot of a former U.S. president. Then Trump was released on $200,000 bond and headed back to the airport for his return flight home to New Jersey, flashing a thumbs up through the window of his sport utility vehicle as the motorcade left. He was rather subdued after the brief jail visit. He insisted, as has repeatedly said, that he did nothing wrong and called the case accusing him of subverting election results a travesty of justice. Look what we do to one another in America today. A fourth indictment on a former president. Trump spoke to reporters for 2 minutes at 8:16 p.m. local time and said, "It's a very sad day for America. It should never happen." Trump saying this at the airport before boarding his plane home. He said, "If you challenge an election, you should be able to. If you challenge an election, you should be able to challenge an election. I thought the election was a rigged election, a stolen election. I should have every right to do that. What they're doing is election interference. They're trying to interfere with an election. There's never been anything like it in our country before. This is their way of campaigning." Trump did not take questions. Prominent Atlanta criminal defense attorney Steve Sadow said in a statement that the president should never have been indicted. He is innocent of all the charges brought against him. And we look forward to the case being dismissed or, if necessary, an unbiased, open-minded jury finding the president not guilty. Until there would be a fifth indictment or a sixth or whatever they can continue to do. We're going to come up against another break here. Let's get this one in. Jim Jordan in Ohio. God bless you. Pray for Jim Jordan and his safety. Hardworking guy. House Judiciary Committee Chair Jim Jordan launched a probe into Fulton County's district attorney who coordinated the indictment of President Trump. Just hours before Trump was arraigned in Fulton County, Jim Jordan opened an investigation on yesterday, into Fulton County's district attorney, Fannie Willis, requesting all records related to the Trump indictment and if Willis communicated with special counsel Jack Smith or any other federal officials. The special counsel indicted Trump in Washington for challenging the 2020 election. Jordan said, "Your indictment and prosecution implicate substantial federal interests, and the circumstances surrounding your actions raise serious concerns about whether they are politically motivated," Jim Jordan said. "You did not bring charges until 2.5 years later, at a time when the campaign for the Republican presidential nomination is in full swing. Moreover, you have requested that the trial in this matter being on March 4, 2024, the day before Super Tuesday and 8 days before the Georgia presidential primary. The timing of this prosecution reinforces concerns about your motivation." House Judiciary Committee Chair Jim Jordan of Ohio launching a probe into this district attorney at Fulton County in Georgia to find out about if there has been any coordinating going on this indictment of former President Donald Trump with other federal officials. Friends, we are really being lambasted here, are we not, with so much. Already break time here. Would you stand by with us for just a moment? We'll come back and share an article here from the Washington Times and then also Just the News. And we're going to open up the phone calls. I would love to hear what you have to say today when we continue.
Missionaries Herb and Linda Gregg had traveled to Dagestan to teach and share their faith. At first, all was well. Then, on a cold fall evening, the unthinkable happened. For 7 months, Herb was held captive, beaten, threatened, and faced death on a daily basis.
"I think these men would have no problem killing my dad if they didn't come up with the money."
He didn't need to have a physical Bible with him, that he had the word completely in his heart and in his mind that would strengthen him.
231 Days tells the powerful, true life story of missionary Herb Gregg, kidnapped by Islamists and held for 231 days. It's a story of survival, faith, and God's mercy. DVDs are available for a donation of $10 when you call 1-800-729-9829. Well, it has been another busy week here for Crosstalk Producers. And some of the programs this week, we actually were revisiting some programs from earlier this year. And just bring your attention to crosstalkamerica.com. Crosstalkamerica.com. We have these shows posted back on, get my day straight here, this being Friday the 25th of August. Yesterday, the program Central Bank Digital Currency Concerns. Wednesday was a rebroadcast of a program titled A New Normal. We can all look back to the normal that we may have thought we had back in old 2019. And then 2020 come along and we had the pandemic and suddenly we have this, quote, new normal. Well, for many, a new normal has come long before the pandemic in the form of the passing of a loved one, or maybe the decline of your personal health. And what do you do with a new normal? Well, that was the program on Wednesday with Dr. Les Olala. These programs available for download. You can listen anytime. They're available now on demand at crosstalkamerica.com, crosstalkamerica.com. And we encourage you to look back at many of these programs when Jim sometimes has these guests in studio. We did have studio guests in on Tuesday. We did a program titled Can America Be Restored? I was joined by Dr. Byron Fox, an evangelist, and then also Brother Chad Connolly with an organization called Faith Wins. And that was the question that was posed. Can America be restored? If you've been listening for the last half hour, 20, 25 minutes, I would love for America to be restored to what she is according to our founding documents. But we're not seeing that. The things that we're doing to one another these days. Maybe I'll go and check that program out as well. Can America Be Restored? These and others available on demand at crosstalkamerica.com. Just before the break, I mentioned Jim Jordan launching that probe into the Fulton County DA, have they possibly coordinated these indictments for President Trump? What's the timing on all of that? You know, the timing is very interesting. Well, Matt Gaetz, Representative Matt Gaetz, he's from Florida, right? Yes. He's introduced a resolution to censure and investigate the federal judge who is overseeing the case against former President Donald Trump related to efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Gaetz accusing U.S. District Court Judge Tanya Chutkan of showing open bias and partisanship in her official capacity as a judge. The push to condemn and launch a House Judiciary Committee investigation by Mr. Gaetz, a staunch ally of the former president, stems from comments that the D.C. judge has made about the 2020 Black Lives Matter protest and Mr. Trump. She became known for doling out more stringent sentences to people that were charged during the January 6th attacks on the Capitol. Than those suggested by prosecutors. The legislation pointed to a comment that the judge made during one of her January 6th sentencing hearings, in which the judge said that comparing the most peaceful protesting over the death of George Floyd to the violent mob seeking to overthrow the lawfully elected government on January 6th was false equivalence. Apparently saying that, the judge said that, Judge Chutkan said that in hearings on October 2021. So we'll see what happens there. Now, we mentioned the debate in Milwaukee this week. Well, were people watching? According to the Geller report, they were not. The headline, Fox News debate numbers are in and they are dismal, a mere 4.5% of what Trump got. What do you mean what Trump got? Well, if you don't know, Donald Trump had an interview this week with Tucker Carlson, and it garnered 240 million views, while Fox and their broadcast their debates, co-moderated by Martha McCallum and Brett Baer on the Fox News Channel, got 11.9 million total viewers. That's less than half of the 24 million who watched the Republicans battle it out back in August of 2015, and a mere 4.5% of Trump viewers. So that kind of says it all, does it not? Now, the Center Square reporting here, of those that were at the debate, let me count back here, that was Wednesday night, correct? Yes, Wednesday night. Those who had qualified for the debate, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, former Ambassador Nikki Haley, former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, former Vice President Mike Pence, businessman Vivek Ramaswamy, and South Carolina U.S. Senator Tim Scott. When asked of these, when they were asked if they would still support Trump for president if he were convicted in one of the 91 charges he faces, all of them except Hutchinson and Christie raised their hand. All of those we just named said they would still support Trump for president if he were convicted in one of the 91 charges he faced. Hutchinson and Christie said they would not support Trump. When did they? I don't know. Somebody needs to ask that question. Christie seemed to start to raise his hand, but then changed his mind. Notably, the candidates had to pledge to support the Republican nominee as a condition of participating in the debate. Did you catch that? The candidates who were going to share the debate stage had to pledge to support whoever would end up being the Republican nominee for president in 2024. That was part of the deal that they made to be able to go. You did get a chance to maybe learn a little bit more about some of these candidates and where they stand. Eight Republicans did take the stage. We named all of those who were there. Some interesting things coming out on Vivek Ramaswamy, unknown to many, but pretty eloquent in his talking, and seems to say many of the right things. But one headline this week saying Newsmax reporting that Ramaswamy is doubling down on his criticism of the U.S. and our aid to Israel, now arguing that all military support should be cut off by 2028. That's from the Washington Free Beacon through Newsmax. Ramaswamy, who's running for the Republican nomination, told the Free Beacon that he would negotiate additional peace treaties between Israel and its Arab neighbors during his first year in the White House. Therefore, Ramaswamy said aid to Israel would not be needed after the current package passed by Congress expires in 2028. So just a little bit, interesting to note. Let's open up the phone line and lines, that is, plural, and hear from you today. 1-800-733-9829. 1-800-733-9829. 1-800-733-9829. While you're getting on board with us, maybe you saw this one and maybe you have not. You're about to hear it, though, from the lips of CNN's Jake Tapper. CNN host and chief Washington correspondent Jake Tapper admitted that former President Trump, quote, was right. He was right when he accused then-presidential candidate Joe Biden's son, Hunter, of accepting large amounts of foreign money during the 2020 presidential debates. This was last week Thursday, CNN's The Lead, Jake Tapper declaring that Biden, quote, was wrong during the matchups between the two candidates 3 years ago. That's when you had the then Democratic nominee, Biden, denied Trump's allegations that his son made a fortune in Ukraine, in China, in Moscow, and various other places. I'll see if we can't share this audio here.
Hunter Biden reported nearly $2.4 million in income in 2017 and $2.2 million in income in 2018, most of which came from Chinese or Ukrainian interests. But this, and this directly goes against what Joe Biden said in the debate in 2020 with Donald Trump. Take a listen.
My son has not made money in terms of this thing about what are you talking about? China.
Once you none of that is president, true. He made a fortune in Ukraine, in China, in Moscow,
that is simply
and various
not
other places.
True.
So it's from two different debates, but I mean, Trump was right. I mean,
wow.
He did make a fortune from China, and Joe Biden was wrong. I don't know that he was lying about it. He might not have been told by Hunter, but this blind spot is a problem.
Yeah, it's a big problem, but thank you for finally seeing the light on this one, Mr. Tapper, saying Glenn Kessler from The Washington Post had a fact check about Joe Biden from earlier this month, noting that Hunter Biden admitted in court in July that he was in fact paid substantial sums from Chinese companies. Citing the piece, Tapper said, Kessler wrote, Hunter Biden reported nearly $2.4 million in income in 2017 and $2.2 million in income in 2018, most of which came from Chinese or Ukrainian interests. He then took a swipe at Biden's 2020 claims before playing footage from the debates. This directly goes against what Joe Biden said in the debate. You just heard this. This directly goes against what Joe Biden said in the debate in 2020 with Donald Trump. And then after playing the footage, Tapper admitted that Trump was correct. Well, it is about time. And how big is that? Looks like Marcy is on the line in Duluth, Minnesota. We'll say hello. Good afternoon, Marcy. You're on Crosstalk.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I'd like to go back to something that I heard from the mayor of the city that on Maui that burned. You know, it says in the Bible, a man's countenance on it is on his face. So you can kind of tell when they're lying when you're actually looking at them. However, I detected a very unsympathetic attitude from that mayor on the clip. I think it's definitely on your news media. You're the only station I listen to. I don't even watch TV anymore. And I thought, that guy showed no sympathy. And I thought he was lying through his teeth. Now that all this evidence coming out about people being blocked, getting out of the city, I think there's some real criminal stuff going on here. And I hope they get at the bottom of it soon because
Amen.
The lives that were innocent lives that were lost. I mean, it's hard to even put this, yes. You know, in your brain and try and process it. It's just disgusting.
I agree. All right, Marcy, thank you for the call. And as we've already mentioned today, let's make sure to be in prayer for these we mentioned today.
Thank you.
All right, Yvonne is in Cape Coral, Florida. And Yvonne, we're coming up against the break here. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, well, if you don't mind, just stay on the line here. We'll take this break, and then we'll come right back and talk with you in what I would assume is sunny Cape Coral, Florida today.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right, stand by with us. Crosstalk will continue on the VCY America Radio Network.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brennan House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. My longtime friend Carl Tykrib just attended the International Parliament on World Religions. All the world's religions coming together to deal, as they said, with the great threat of, wait for it, evangelical Christians. That's right. And they declared that the dominant religion that should bind all the world's religions is the belief in Mother Earth, Gaia Earth worship, pantheism, all is God, panentheism, God is in all. And they declared the threat, evangelical Christians. They are authoritarians and setting the stage for the Antichrist, who they declared was Donald Trump. My friends, the overall theme was, they're setting up to persecute Christians and prosecute them through things like hate crime legislation. The Bible says all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. And that is their plan. I'm Brandon House.
And Crosstalk continues on the VCY America Radio Network on the line from Cape Coral, Florida. Yvonne, you're on the air.
Yes, I quickly just wanted to say about the candidates, and there was one who is just a rising star, and I know everyone assumes he is wonderful, and I'm sure he is, Vivek Ramaswamy. But I pray that everybody would look into the background. He is a rising star like Obama, and he said he has many of the Christian values. But when you research his background, he was raised in the Hindu religion. And this is still, I mean, I pray that everyone will please help out and see who, because he's a rising star headed over DeSantis right now. I thank you so much and pray for everyone. Thank you.
Amen. All right. Thank you for the call, Yvonne. We'll go to our next call in just a moment. We have not mentioned anything on COVID, but friends, you're probably hearing a little bit more about that as well. The return of masking and all of this is definitely the rumble of that is on the horizon as cases of COVID are up in our country. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin has sent a letter this week to Christy Grimm, the Inspector General of the Department of Health and Human Services, actually demanding a probe into whether scientists working for the federal government concealed records about COVID-19. The request, originally sent on Monday, comes after the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic in late June revealed that a senior advisor with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Dr. David Morins, explicitly asked officials to communicate over Gmail because his NIH email is says a freedom of information request. In other terms here, Morins, who regularly consulted and worked closely with then-agency director Anthony Fauci, asked his colleagues to reroute their communications to any of his personal addresses, and he would delete anything he don't want to see in the New York Times, end of quote, stipulating that his Gmail was hacked. These statements reveal an attempt to limit public access to certain communications directly related to the COVID-19 pandemic, potentially in violation of federal record-keeping requirements. Ron Johnson, noting this in his letter to the Inspector General, further asking Grimm to broaden her search to cover the National Institutes of Health, the NIH, which includes the NIAID, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. We have some other stories here. We're probably not going to be able to cover these, but the headline is the Pandemic Planning Racket. One note here says in the fall of 2022, mainstream media started warning of a potential triple-demic with COVID, seasonal influenza, and respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, being in circulation at the same time. The sudden focus on RSV just so happened to coincide with announcements that RSV vaccines were being fast-tracked. As we're heading into the fall of 2023, the triple-demic of COVID, RSV, and influenza is again making headlines. A Google search for the keywords triple pandemic 2023 garnered a staggering 41.1 million articles, and as we saw all through the COVID pandemic, news agencies are using the exact same headlines and talking points. This is unequivocal evidence that the triple-demic narrative is being coordinated by a central source. So we'll be following up on that. This is a report from out of Mercola, the pandemic planning racket, and how things seem to be heating up there. Art is in New Lisbon, Wisconsin. Art, thank you for calling Crosstalk.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm curious if any of you guys in your organization, maybe even Brandon House or somebody associated with your radio station, is interested in looking in more into the things going on with this wildfire in Hawaii. It seems as though the wildfires just had a brain of their own to leave some of these multi-million dollar oceanfront mansions alone. And there's so many other things going on with the school being shut down and the water not being available. I think there's just so much more nefarious things going on and companies coming in to try and build and buy the land and create a 15-minute city out there. It's kind of scary and really unsettling to see some of the things going unreported.
Yes, and as we mentioned earlier in this program, Art, thank you for your call. As we mentioned earlier, the House is looking into some investigations into all of this. And, you know, I guess all that we can do is wait and certainly pray. Let's go to line four. Tommy is in Minnesota. Tommy, thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about the debate, the small viewership. I don't think Fox wanted people watching. They kept advertising on, I don't have cable or satellite or any of that. I just have a regular antenna. And I can see them on 25.1. And they kept saying all day that tonight on our Fox channel at 8 o'clock Eastern time, which confused me because Wisconsin is not in Eastern time, and it was on cable, and they never said that. So I couldn't find it. I kept looking for it all night long, and I talked to other people that were the same thing. They kept looking and couldn't find it, and it was the next day when we figured out it had to have been on cable. That's why we couldn't find them.
All right. Well, interesting, and you know, the numbers supporting kind of what you're saying, that apparently there were a lot of people that couldn't find it, were not able to watch that. But, well, we do thank you for your call, Tommy. And, friends, there's several other stories here, as always, that we will not be able to get to. It does certainly seem that we often bring so much of the bad news. But I do hope, friends, that that America is waking up. I pray that we here in America, whatever side of the political aisle you are on, whatever your beef, whatever your concern, I would hope and pray that we would all be Americans again and seek the common good for our country and notice the powerful outside influence that's affecting our lives here today. And you say, well, it doesn't affect me too much. Well, maybe it doesn't affect you, but let me tell you, it's going to affect your kids and it's going to affect your grandkids. God save America. Make us worthy of being saved.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.